Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success.
We know that running a small firm is tough, and ending the year with a profit may be even tougher. That's why we created Profit for Small Firm Architects. It's a 3-module digital course, and it's available to you for free right now by visiting entrearchitect.com/freecourse. Entree Architect Podcast, episode 129. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. You ever have a big idea for a product or a service? Something bigger or completely different from what you're doing now? You ever wonder what life would be like if you pursued that idea? Well, this week, we're chatting with someone who had an idea in architecture school inspired by the technology that he was using every day, and he decided to take that path and pursue his passion. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, we go from architect to tech startup with Ki Su of Modelo.io. This episode of the Entree Architect Podcast is sponsored by FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, and track your time. Learn more at freshbooks.com/architect. Ki Su, welcome to the Entree Architect Podcast.
Well, it's good to be here.
Well, thank you for spending some time here. I know it's very early there. You're calling from China. And so I appreciate you taking the time to meet with me here so early in the morning on your side.
Well, thanks for having me. It's such a pleasure.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So I'd like to start, like I start every podcast when I have a guest, is to start with your origin story. You are an architect, and that architecture sort of led you somewhere else. So go back to sort of the time where you discovered architecture and what inspired you about architecture and why you wanted to become an architect, and then give us the story of your journey to find you where you are today.
Sure. Oh, that gave me a long one, actually. Yeah, so it's actually all started from my childhood, actually, because my dad is a structural engineer, a civil engineer, and now my family actually has architecture design a firm and a structural design firm. So in a way that I have been seeing my dad doing all this engineering works and as well as some of the architectural works when I was very young.
So it's in your blood. And
it was, yeah, it was very interesting, right? As a boy, I mean, for me, it was very interesting to see, you know, all these physical models that I can look from different angles, like imagine yourself to be, you know, on the street or in the building or in the room. It just really, really interesting. Very interesting. Was very good. I mean, we used to play all with all the toys. We probably gonna bring all the toys over there, like around the buildings or even in the rooms. So and play some stories out there. So it was quite a thing for me. And then it's back then the building or the architecture is a container of all the activities or all the things or the stories around my toys. So it was very interesting. And I think that's one of the reasons. And my cousin, my sister, she's a painter, doing all these oil paintings all the time and all these calligraphies. So I also have learned from her for quite a lot. So in a way that you can say that you can say that it's a combination of her her talents and her influence of the art and my dad's influence about the civil engineer,
yeah,
kind of combined two together, and then I chose architecture as my major.
When did you decide that you wanted to be an architect? Did you just was it just always what you wanted to do?
Well, it wasn't. My dream actually back then was to be a professional soccer player. Actually,
soccer, you said.
Yeah. So back then, when I was in middle school, I was I used to play soccer, and I was a pretty good soccer player, and several of my friends actually end up with a professional soccer career. And then my parents back then didn't really believe that soccer is a legit career for you know, boys. And so they actually forced me not to pursue it.
Yeah.
And rather than that, I mean, architecture is definitely my first choice other than soccer. So at the end of my high school, I chose architecture as my major in college.
So because of your dad and your sister, you yeah, knew what architecture was pretty early on, I'd assume. And
right.
Then, but you loved soccer, so you pursued soccer, and then mom and dad put an end to that, and so you went back to doing your second love.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say that.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I look back, actually, I mean, I think my parents did they did a good job on.
They made the right choice.
Stop me. Yeah, they made the right choice for sure, for sure. I mean, look at all my friends who actually pursuing the professional career. It was really bad. It was a terrible story, actually.
Yeah,
it wasn't good.
As hard as the architecture profession is, I bet you to be a success in professional soccer is probably way more difficult.
Yeah, and there's lots of other things related in there. It's not only about how good you play. There's some other things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a long story, another story. Yeah,
yeah, yep. Another day.
Yeah.
So tell me. So once you discovered architecture and that was your path, where'd you go from there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to college, which is one of the four well-known architecture school in China, called Tianjin University, and studied there for 5 years and didn't really find it interesting. And then I think in my third year, I already started to think about apply to the U.S. schools for master degree.
Mm-hmm.
So right after I graduated from that university, I applied to, I actually got several offers from the U.S. universities, and then I chose a university called Miami University, but it's actually in Ohio, Oxford in Ohio. I went there for my master's degree. And it's a really small town. I got a pretty big culture shock at the beginning, because my hometown is not a big city in China, but it actually has 6 million people. But that small town, Oxford, in Ohio, I think they only have like 20,000 or something like that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful difference. Town.
Yeah, it's a beautiful town, but I got really boring, like really boring after a month. Something like almost like too different for me to adopt with. So, and then I decided to actually, leave Ohio, and I then applied to USC, the University of Southern California. Yeah. Again, I got the offer like at the beginning, but I didn't go there. And then I applied to them again, and then at the end, I transferred my my credit from Miami University to USC, and it's actually got my degree, Master of Architecture degree in USC. So that was the end of my architecture education, actually.
Yeah.
And then later on, after I actually, right after I graduated from USC, I was actually practicing in Los Angeles for 1.5 years, and then also taught in USC for a graduate school studio with a French architect, François Roche, for a year over there. And it was quite an experience for me. And right after that, I decided to pursue another degree in Harvard, but it's a quite different one. It's a combination of design and computer science, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been doing lots of programming, software developments, as well as digital fabrications.
So the Harvard degree was not an architecture degree. It was technology. Right. It was development, computer development.
Right.
And
design. So I was very into what we used to call computational design. I mean, and they still call it that, but I was very into programming back then, I think from 2009. And it was very interesting for me to combine that knowledge with architecture and with design, and sometimes to improve the efficiency when you like doing modelings, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's how I got very interested into that. And then that's how I decided to go to Harvard for that degree. And turned out to be a really good one. And that was actually lead to the start of Modelo.
So at Harvard, Modelo, the idea of Modelo came to life?
Yeah, it's not really the idea of Modelo, but it was actually the first time I saw the technology called WebGL back in, I think, the June of 2012. It was first released in... I think November 2011, and then my director back then, Panagiotis, showed me the language. It's basically, it's an API that allows you to render 3D models directly in the browsers, the 3D data. So that didn't really happen before, and then it was the first time. Okay. And then the first time I saw it, I saw lots of potential over there, because I used to do a lot of 3D models, modelings all the time. And then I spend lots of time on the browser, say on Facebook or stuff like that, Twitter. And then at the moment when I first realized I can visualize all my production, all the 3D models directly in the browser, right? The browser that I used to browse Facebook and doing all the other like Twitter stuff. So I didn't really know that end up as a Modelo, but it was very interesting to me that we can do something here, and then we can actually push our production to end users only through one step, the browser. So meaning that you can send over your URL to somebody else, and they can visualize your production right away, and you can do lots of interactions over there.
And that was the inspiration for Modelo? Yes.
Yep, that was inspiration for Modelo.
Okay, so talk about a little bit about Modelo. Modelo is your startup. It's a company,
yeah.
Online company. Talk about Modelo and what it is and why you started it.
Yeah, I mean, Modelo is a web-based, basically a browser-based, what we call a building design collaboration and presentation platform for architects, engineers, and maybe general contractors as well. So it offers all this, cloud-based hosting and management and communication and then presentation services, basically. Allows you to visualize 3D models, your 3D models, no matter what kind of CAD software you use, and visualize directly in the browser in a much faster way, actually way, way much faster than any other software out there. And then you can do all those communications, markups, and screenshots, and even then make a walkthrough of the model like in a very fast way and faster and intuitive way. And so, and the reason we started the company is because first the fact that I saw WebGL and that really excites me, and secondly, I used to do all of these like screenshots using email to send over screenshots to my clients or to my collaborators. And on their side, they have to do a markup on the screenshots, print out the screenshots, markup on it, and send back to me. Like, we do this back and forth all the days. So, but when the first time I saw WebGL, is definitely something that can help us solve that problem. So that was the beginning of it.
And so I just want to make sure I'm clear on what Modelo is. It's a place where you can take computer design, your 3D models, your built in Rhino or Revit or SketchUp, and put them in Modelo, and then anybody who has a browser can go to your channel on Modelo and be able to see what you're seeing. They can manipulate the model on their end. You can manipulate it on your end. Is that right?
Yep. It's a little more than that. I mean, yep. Meaning that let me give you a scenario, right?
Yes. Yeah.
If I'm the modeler, I'm gonna save my models, all my models. So, say previously I used Dropbox or I use FTP servers.
Yeah.
Now you can actually use Modelo to save all of your design, no matter it's the 3D models or 2D images or anything. You can save all of the things over there in Modelo within your own project, right? You can create you can create as many projects as you want, and you can save all the models in different projects out there, and then you can invite the other collaborators in your projects, and then all the other collaborators, all the other project members will be able to see what you or they uploaded to that single project directly with the browser, and then they don't need any plugins and they don't need any software to view it. And then on top of that, you can do a whole bunch of other like collaboration, markups, and communication and presentation stuff. So you can use it for presentation. And because of the fact the rendering speed is really fast, it's actually 50, for some of the models, it's like 50 times faster than the spinning speed in Rhino. And it's even better if you compare from Revit and Modelo. So we actually offer you a very fast way of, doing all this communication and the presentation.
So it's sort of like if it's both storage and collaboration, it's sort of like Dropbox meets Basecamp for architects.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, plus the presentation features.
Right.
So you
right.
can also use it for presentation. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a great idea. Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to FreshBooks for their support as a platform sponsor of Entree Architect, because as a platform sponsor, FreshBooks has provided funding and support for our overall mission here at Entree Architect. They recognize the need for small firms like us to build better businesses in order to be better architects. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use accounting software designed to help us small firm owners get organized, save time, and get paid faster. It takes care of invoicing, expense tracking, estimating, reporting, and it all happens out on the cloud, so you have access to your information from anywhere that you have access to the internet. And I use FreshBooks for my own small firm, Five Cat Studio, and my favorite feature of the FreshBooks software is sending my invoices by email and allowing my clients to pay by credit card. When FreshBooks says that you'll get paid faster, they're not kidding. With the convenience of clicking a button and paying by credit card, many of my clients pay now as soon as they receive their invoice. And for those clients who don't pay right away, FreshBooks automatically sends them a reminder of the balance due at an interval that I set. So once I send an invoice, I can go back to being an architect, and I don't need to chase down any of my clients. And Tim Lee of FreshBooks will show you how easy it is to send invoices by email on our exclusive video series Tim and I produced exclusively for the Entree Architect community. Check out this free video series at entrearchitect.com/freshbooksvideo. There's no catch. There's no email. It's completely free. Just go to entrearchitect.com/freshbooksvideo and you will get the videos right away. There's three of them. Shows you everything you need to know about getting started. And then go to freshbooks.com/architect and sign up for your free 30-day trial and give it a try. It's free. I suggest you just send one invoice and see what happens. That's how I got started. Just send one invoice to one client and see how it works. And when I did that and I got paid much faster than usual, I signed up for the rest of it and I set up my whole account in FreshBooks. FreshBooks.com/architect for your free 30-day trial. And be sure to enter Entree Architect into How Did You Hear About Us. So you had that idea when you saw WebGeo and said, okay, I need to create this new tool. How did you get from there to where you are today? Let's talk about that journey from, you know, the idea. You were inspired. You said, okay, you had this idea of what you can do with this new technology. What were the practical steps to get from that point to a functioning platform that you have today?
Okay. So, well, at the beginning, I think I graduated from Harvard GSD in May of 2013. And then right after that, I already got my thesis finished. It was actually one of the very first prototype of Modelo. And I used it for my thesis project. So I spent like 7 months programming the entire thing. And then right after graduation, I actually decided to only pursuing this rather than go back to the architecture design track. So, and then I just started to programming different ideas and prototyping the product, as well as applying to, you know, like accelerators. And so in March 2014, I got myself accepted in an accelerator called Beta Spring in Providence. And so that was actually the beginning of the company officially. And we registered through their with their help. And then the guys there, they have teaching us many things.
So an accelerator, just for anybody who doesn't understand what an accelerator is, it's a place where startups apply, and if you're accepted, you come into this sort of ecosystem, into a physical building, right? Where other startups are, and you essentially, it's an incubator for ideas, and they help you develop that idea and help you launch it. Is that correct? Sort of.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, so the program itself is kind of like a mini MBA. And they also invest you some money and give you the free space and give you all the mentorship, right? So we have all these great people coming in. I mean, successful entrepreneurs coming in, teaching us lessons and also discuss with us about ideas. It was very interesting. And the other thing is why it's very interesting is because I was actually the only one who has something to do with architecture. So there, none of the others have anything to do with architecture. So that actually forced me to change my mindset. I mean, for example, right, I used to present to people with slides. So I rarely gave presentation without slides. I think on day one, I almost lost my voice when I was actually asked to pitching the idea of Modelo, because I rarely tried giving presentation without any slides. So it was really interesting. But at the end of the program, I was one of the best of giving pitches to any others. And you can actually ask me to give different pitch with different time frame. So it was very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were accepted into this incubator or this accelerator, and right. You had this guidance and the support and the financing. When you were finished with that phase, was it ready to go? Was it done?
It wasn't done. It wasn't actually done. When I was back in there, I spent quite a time to find the right business model, as well as at the same time developing what we call the first prototype of Modelo. And then also at the same time finding a partner, a co-founder. So I think at the end of April 2014, I found my partner and who actually joined me as a co-founder of
Modelo. Why did you feel that you needed a partner? What were you missing that you needed in a partner?
Well, it's always hard to do the whole business with only you. I mean, it's not only about skills, but also about mental set.
Yeah.
It's really hard to just do everything by yourself. It's always good to have somebody there who you can talk with, who you can communicate with, and who can actually offer some other ideas, some feedbacks whenever you want to do something more, or you create something new. You need to discuss with somebody. There has to be someone, and there has to be someone who also work with you. And that's not mentioned that the amount of a production development is a lot, so I need somebody to be there as well. And so luckily, I found my co-founder. Yeah.
So how did you find that person?
It was hard. It was really hard. I mean, at the end of the day, I was referred by a friend. So Tian is actually a friend of my friend. And he used to be an industrial designer. And my friend is also, he's now a UX designer, but he used to be an industrial designer as well. So they know each other for quite a time. And I first approached to my friend and told him that, asking him if he is interested doing Modelo with me. And he actually told me that he has a better candidate. And that was my co-founder. And we started as just collaborators. And turned out that we two make very good partners. Like in every way actually. So I mean after one month of collaboration, we found each other to be found it to be really comfortable to work with each other, and then we somehow believe very similar stuff. So and then it seems like that's the right thing to do to found the company as co-founders.
Yeah.
So that's how I found him.
Yeah. But Modelo was very well developed by that point, right?
It wasn't. It wasn't.
It was not.
It was not. It was not.
So when you found your co-founder, was that mm-hmm. during the accelerator, inside the accelerator?
Right. It was inside the accelerator. And at the end of the accelerator, we have some a barely workable prototype. And then we, after that, we spend two of us spend like 3 months developing the first prototype of Modelo. And it wasn't as stable as it is now, actually far less stable as it is now. And I mean, because of the fact that neither of us are actually professional programmers, although my programming skill is not that bad, but still, I mean, compared to all these talented engineers that we have now, I'm actually nobody. Uh-huh. So back then it was nothing. And then in September 2014, we actually released the first prototype. And it was interesting. People got excited and interested in using it as a kind of, you know, like a showcasing place. So they actually can showcase their 3D models. They can embed in their own portfolio side. And that was it. It wasn't that much of things that you can do over there. But the fact that to have a prototype, and then the fact that there are people using it, there are like almost like 2,000 people using it. And that actually helped us to get the funding from VC. And that happened in January 2015. And that's how the Modelo right now started. Mm-hmm. So after that, we got the funding, and then we start hire people. Actually, before that, our CTO joined us, also referred by a friend. And then after January 2015, we started to, you know, like really form a team and hire more engineers and marketing person and all the other persons, BD and sales. And we haven't been developing the software for 12 months. And then we launched it in January this year.
And then what about funding? We don't need specifics about funding, but how did you find your funding? How did you find investors?
Back then I was like, we have came into a conclusion that if we really want to push this stuff to be a legit business, we need some funding to, you know, like boost the development, right? Because we were talking about like the prototype is okay, it's interesting, but it's definitely nothing close to a product. So if we really want to make a product, we need to hire real engineers. And then what the good thing is, we already have our CTO join us, and he definitely agreed about that. So he's a fantastic engineer. He's a doctor in computer graphics, has been doing all this like fundamental GPU optimizations for AMD and NVIDIA. So he's one of the top tier engineers. And so we are doing the discussion, everybody agreed that we need funding to go forward. So then I just, you know, like started my fundraising mode and just reach out to friends, talk with all the people that I know who are under investors, and talk with a whole bunch of VCs. And luckily that a VC that I used to know before came to MIT for a pitch contest. Mm-hmm. And I was actually introduced I was actually asked to be there. One of my friends invited me to be in the pitch contest. So actually I pitched in that event, and it was even really well. I mean, we're really good at the pitching, actually, especially when we slides, right? Because I was architect.
Right.
So it went really well, and they really like it. So, and then it's a Chinese investor. It's actually one of the best known Chinese in China. It's called Zhen Fund, Zhen Fund. And then after that, I went back to China and catching up with them again. And then it's so funny because I was really lucky. I was very lucky because I talked with one of their one of their partners back then in there, and he actually invested. He invested in another company. I mean, from his previous fund, a company called Crystal Image. I think maybe some of the audience knows it. is one of the rendering companies, the outsourced rendering companies. So, I mean, I remember the old days that we all send over the models to Crystal Image, and they can actually render high fidelity renderings mm-hmm. in something like 12 hours, like for a certain amount of money. So they're really good business. So the investor actually invested in them back in 2008. And it's so funny because they have been like thinking of doing such thing like Modelo back in 2009. But at the same time, they were like trying to file for IPO. Their like revenue in 2008 was really good. It was like something around like $250 million annual revenue. So it was really good. And they are trying to file the IPO, but for some reason didn't really succeed. So the entire thing crashed a little bit. And then they didn't really continue to pursuing the Modelo, like the similar idea of Modelo.
Yeah.
So it ended up as something that guy feels really bad of not doing it, right? And then all of a sudden he found another company doing similar idea. And then at the right time, like because of the fact that WebGL is ready. So, and then that's how he decided to invest in us. That was really exciting. And so that's how it happened.
That's a great story. I mean, the reason I wanted you to come on is to talk about this idea and how you took it from a simple idea to where you are today. That's why I sort of asked all those step-by-step questions, because there are a lot of architects out there who are listening right now that have an idea. And they most of them will just say, you know, I can't get into that. I'm an architect. So to hear your story and to hear the process that you go through, I think is inspiring and informative. So I appreciate you sort of giving us the background on Modelo.
Sure. Yeah.
So people can find Modelo at modelo.io. And
yep.
I think there's a free version, right? So they can do a trial version of it. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can try it for free.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So you can go to modelo.io and sign up and try it for free. So anybody that's out there doing, you know, 3D models and are collaborating and presenting to clients and presenting to other teams, it looks like it's a great tool for that. So check it out at modelo.io. Kisu, thank you very much for your service to our profession of architecture here.
It's definitely my pleasure. It's not only to the profession, but also to myself, right? Because I used to be an architect.
Yeah, exactly. I appreciate you for sharing your knowledge here today at the Entree Architect Podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode129. And don't forget to grab the Entree Architect Academy course, Profit for Small Firm Architects. It's free for you at entrearchitect.com/free course. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. And I encourage you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, share. That is how we're going to change the world. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay. We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.